John's gospel doesn't have the Last Supper account, doesn't have the Lord's Supper, the Eucharist account there, but it does have this really long, what is called the Bread of Life discourse, this long sermon by Jesus about the Eucharist. And he makes it very clear that this is actually his body and blood, and that it's he is the true bread that comes down from heaven. And I was thinking about that when I was reading this week. He says, I'm the bread of life. He says, and that part, that sounds familiar, right? We have to ask ourselves, I think at some point we have to ask ourselves, but why? Why did you become food? And isn't that kind of odd? It's not the first thing you would think of. God becomes food? What? Why does he say that? Why is he the bread of life? And then he says, the true bread that comes down from heaven. Which got me thinking, what is the false bread? If he's the true bread, what's the false bread? And I didn't have to think for very long about that. But for some of the people that are following Jesus around, he says, why are you following me? He says, stop following me. I'm just trying to get away from you. No, he says, you're looking for me not because you saw signs. Like, follow him across the lake. They're looking for him everywhere. They looked for him on one side of the lake, then they went across the lake to find him on the other side. Poor Jesus. And he says, you're following me not because of the signs that point to the kingdom, but because of the bread and the loaves and because of the your bellies were fed. You are looking for me because you're hungering after the bread of this world, the material things. And their hearts are being tested in a way. Well, their hearts are being tested, as are the 12. The hearts of the 12 are also being tested. If you think about why they're following Jesus, there are these temptations to be his disciples, especially his apostles, because, not because he's the true bread, which he is, but because I get noticed. There's a lot of notoriety and probably fame and some honors that would come with that. At first, and then later, a whole lot of shame and dishonor. But why were they following him? Their hearts were tested. Am I following Jesus because I get honored in the eyes of men? Because am I following Jesus because I'm going to receive power when he enters into his rule? Is it going to be this political power thing? Because there were 12 tribes of Israel and there are 12 apostles, they can figure it out. This looks like a new government. And people are wondering that about Jesus and about his 12 apostles. The zealots are wondering about that. Are we going to overthrow the Romans? Are you going to set us free from Roman rule? What's going on? If I follow you, will I have influence? Will I have honor and be noticed? Yes, I'm one of the apostles of Jesus. No big deal, really. You know, he does a lot of miracles. I kind of help him out with those miracles, you know. Will it be power and influence? Will it be also material wealth? Because if he's the King of Kings, and you're in the top 12, I mean, even if you're the 12th seed of the top, that's pretty good, right? Why are they following Jesus, and why are the crowds looking for him? We know that Judas betrayed Jesus, right, at the Last Supper, at the Eucharist, he betrayed Jesus, but he, long before that, had been stealing from the money bags. He'd been stealing from the poor. He'd been stealing. It doesn't get much lower than that, right? Why? Well, we know that he used the money that he was paid for the betrayal of Jesus, he used that to buy a field. A little bit of speculation, but perhaps he followed Jesus because he thought he would become wealthy and live a comfortable life, and live a life of maybe pleasure. And when he found out it's not that sort of a thing, he immediately started looking elsewhere. And it was working on his plan B. His plan B was, his exit strategy was, he had it figured out. And it was, it seemed to revolve around money. But these three basic, these are three of the basic temptations of false bread in our lives as well. Material wealth, comfort, pleasure. Basically, pleasure, honor, power. Money just helps us get those things. If we're too in love with money, it's probably one of those three things. Pleasure, honor, and power. And under pleasure, you could also kind of insert comfort or ease of life. And when we hunger after those things, Jesus says to the crowds, don't hunger after these things. Yes, the Lord knows all of your needs. He knows you need all of these things. But don't hunger after these. Don't follow me for these. Don't follow me as the King of Kings because you know, you want any of these three things. Because I promise you trouble and dishonor and you'll have to carry your cross. I also promise you eternal life. Okay, that goes together. But he says, the true bread that endures to eternal life. That's what he says. Not the false bread. And so the first question for us is, what is the false bread that you hunger after and that I hunger after? Have you ever had the experience of desiring something so much and then you get it and then it's like not that awesome? And you realize, well, actually, that's not really everything that I had expected it to be. You put your whole heart and soul into it. Maybe you even miss church for it or something. And it sort of becomes empty and we become hungrier even as we eat it. And this isn't satisfying. I have had that experience. I'm sure we all have. And I think I've told you about this. The different things that I thought would really fulfill this longing. It's a longing for God, ultimately. But we sometimes seek it in other things or people. And I remember thinking at one point, if I could shoot an 8-point buck, I think I've told you this. That would be the thing. That would be the true bread that had come down from heaven, the true steak, I guess. And my life would be complete. I think I was a seventh grader. And I didn't shoot a deer in seventh grade, but eventually when I did, I realized, oh, this is really not even close to being the true bread, right? Different things over the years. There's different things that I inserted in there. One of them was, there's a beautiful, wonderful Catholic woman that I dated in college. Before we dated, I thought, oh, wow, if I was in a relationship with her, that would be the thing that would really satisfy the deepest longings of my heart. And after all of these things, after I shot this deer, like, it was great. It really was. I'm not going to say it wasn't. It was great for about 3 weeks. But after about 3 weeks, it kind of wears off. And then I go to college with my friends that I grew up with, and it was great. You know, but after about 3 weeks, it started to wear off. And then I started to date this wonderful, beautiful, holy Catholic woman, and it was great. But after about 3 weeks... No, I really, had we been married, I'm sure we would still be happily married for our whole life. But there was a realization that this isn't the ultimate thing. Even this relationship, good as it was, it wasn't the ultimate thing. And I had to realize, and I came to identify a deeper spiritual hunger. And I think before I got here, a bunch of you watched a video about me talking about this sort of a thing, but I knew so clearly that there was something about the Lord that I had not yet received, not yet discovered, not yet been filled by Him in that way. And that's true, and that's true in marriage. That's true in every marriage, right? This isn't a statement that, oh, you're not made for marriage. No, yet we are. We're made for communion. But you know, in marriage, perhaps better than anybody, that that other person, they aren't God. So God put them in your life and you in theirs for communion, and it's good, and it's very good, and yet you're supposed to help each other to heaven. Your communion is a foretaste of heaven. It points to the ultimate communion, but it's not yet the ultimate communion, which is why even in a holy marriage, it's possible to be lonely or have a fight, or, you know, it's not, you can't put on your spouse the pressure of being God, your ultimate fulfillment, the fulfillment of all desire, because you will crush them. They will never live up to that, even the best. And so the communion is supposed to be a foretaste of heaven, leading you to God, revealing Christ to your spouse, revealing this communion to them, and receiving from them what God is revealing to you of his love through that person, because they are a gift to you. But it's a sign. It's also pointing us toward him, because he alone is the fulfillment of all desire. In our vocations, marriage, religious life, priesthood, are supposed to carry us and point us and walk us toward he who we were made for. As St. Augustine said, you have made us for yourself, O God, and our hearts are restless until they rest in you. We are being invited by Jesus to come to, he says, come unto me, I am the bread of life. What you have not been satisfied by in other things, in other people, what you have not ever been able to be satisfied by, I can satisfy that hunger, and I alone. Because when we come to the Eucharist, when we come to Jesus, the bread of life, we come to this banquet of his love, and that's really what, that's one way of describing the Mass, that he gives himself, God gives himself to us in such an intimate way and desires communion with us, and desire, because he loves us, he wants to be so close to us that he dwells in us, and he says, come unto me. And when you come, don't bring a thimble. Don't have your expectations be, well, you know, got Mass done for the day. Cool. Maybe if we desire a little bit more, you know, we might receive a little bit more in turn. And he says, come unto me, I'm the bread of life. I am the love for which you are made, for which you ultimately long, without which there's always going to be this hunger. And coming to the Lord in that way, it satisfies us. And I know that we've probably all experienced that, or maybe not. And if not, like, that's really good news, right? But here's the other thing. Once we come to Jesus, once we come to this Eucharistic feast of his love poured out for us, calling us to communion with God, we're also asked and called. The Lord wants us to go out and invite other people to the feast. Because again, we're supposed to be, and indeed are, a community of missionary disciples. Yes, my goal is to say that every single Sunday until the end of the world. And as missionaries, we're supposed to evangelize. And I asked this at the 5 p.m. and they didn't know, and I'm just wondering if you're holier than them. What does anyone know what evangelize means? Spread the word. Spread the word. That's pretty good. I'm going to give it to him. And the word, really, the evangelion means good news. Evangelion is the Greek word from whence we have the word evangelize. Spread the word. There's good news. How many people do you know? And you, this could describe me or you as well, right, on a lot of days. But how many people do you know who are trying to satisfy their heart's desires with all kinds of things or people or relationships that are not going to satisfy them? How many people do you know who are not seeking God as the fulfillment of all desire? And they keep eating and they're still empty. And you might say, Father, you're describing me a lot of days. Okay. The false bread, it tempts us all. How many people do you know who do not know that they were made for communion with God? How many people do you know who are starving, like spiritually starving to death, because they've never heard good news about Jesus Christ? We're called to bring that good news. And earlier I mentioned, you know, you might pray with people and that's really difficult. I have good news about bringing good news. You don't necessarily have to do that. There's something really easy that you could do. This fall, St. Mary will be launching the Alpha Course. If you've never heard of the Alpha Course, it's a 10-week course where people come one night a week. It's going to be Tuesday night. People come on Tuesday night. It starts September 11th, goes through November 13th. Every Tuesday night, people are invited to just come over into we'll be in the multi-use room, share a meal, and then we'll watch a video. The videos are great. It is a message about Jesus, and then discuss the video. The point of the Alpha Course, and by the way, Alpha being the first letter of the Greek alphabet, the idea is this is just like step one, just the first thing. It's not bombarding them with, and then there's the Eucharist, and then there's confession, and then, well, what if somebody's not Catholic, or what if they're not even Christian? What if they haven't been to a church before? This is a more or less perfect way and pretty non-threatening way to invite somebody to ponder some of the basic questions, like, is there more to life than this? Why am I here? You know, some of those existential questions. What is it that I was made for? What's going to fulfill me? And that's what we're invited to accompany people along those questions. And so when we receive here from our Lord, who is the fulfillment of all desire, He wants us to go out. We're here at the Feast of His love, but He wants to draw more people into His love. And this is a way that's even easy for Catholics, because you don't have to do the evangelizing. You just have to accompany people. It's really non-threatening. It's not about changing somebody's mind. It's just about having a conversation and inviting people to think about these things, talk about life. And what difference, like in all of these questions of life, why am I here? What am I made for? What's the point of life? What does Jesus have to do what would He say to any of those questions? Or what difference would He make in any of those questions? The easy thing is all you have to do is invite somebody and come with them. I mean, eating food and watching a video, it's pretty easy. And it's kind of hard sometimes to invite people right to Mass, especially if they're not Catholic. Standing, sitting, kneeling, kneeling, standing, sitting. Everybody knows the prayers. You know, this is really much more of an evangelistic, like a user-friendly thing that's easy for people to relate to. So pray about that. Think about that and pray about that. Is there somebody that you want to invite that the Lord, really, it's His love, okay? That His love is saying, I want you to invite people to this. And we, when we come to the Lord, you know, we come as like needing Him. We come as beggars, really. And as Peter Herbeck said, evangelization, spreading the good news, is just one beggar helping another beggar to find the feast, to invite them here. It's really simple. In the end, it's really just about accompanying people to the Lord, as Pope Francis said. So pray about that as we receive Jesus today at the banquet of the Feast of His love, the love for which we were made. We were made to receive His love. And then we were made to love others. Allow the Lord to love you, but then to lead you to who He might want to invite to the feast.